Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. I'm joined by my good friend, Chris Luger. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks, Doug. How you doing?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm excited to get into your story. We've hung out several times in the past, but it's always fun to do a podcast, as you know, because we could ask questions and really take time and not be like at a conference, perhaps, where you're kind of we're pulled in different directions, and a lot of times conversations are interrupted. So I'm pumped to get into it. Chris is the creator of Heavy Metal Money. He gained financial literacy in his 40s. A divorced single dad, he offers unique metal perspectives on financial independence and retirement. He retired pretty recently at age 50, and over at Heavy Metal Money, he explores side hustles, passive income, and advocating for real estate to accelerate financial freedom. And today we're going to talk about his journey in retiring early. And we're going to get into sort of the why of FI and finding purpose after you stop working your traditional job or however people define their own retirement. So Chris, again, very excited to get into it. When did you first discover FI or FIRE? When did that come on your radar?
Yeah. So I kind of discovered it after my divorce. So I got divorced in like 2015, 2016 was when I was officially divorced, kind of single. And because I went through that with separating from my wife, I had to like pay all my bills myself. I had to refinance the house so I could afford the mortgage. And I had to learn how to like budget all that stuff on my own. My wife had handled all the finances the entire 19 years we were together. So I didn't know where the money was going or what we were spending money on. I just knew it was getting done. And so I had to learn all that. And then because I started searching about, you know, how to budget and, you know, learn ways that I could start tracking my expenses, the blogs, the podcasts, the books, that all started coming to the top. Again, probably 2016, 2017. And that's when I first discovered, like, I was like, you know, Mr. Money Mustache. And I was like, wait a minute. If you're intentional with your money, you can retire in like 10 years. I'm like, no way. Like, nobody does that. You know, I mean, it was totally foreign to me. And here I am, proof that, yeah, I could do it in 10 years. So that's exactly what I did.
Did you and your ex-wife like divide up those tasks? You were just like, you're handling it. That's cool. And I could focus on other stuff. That some relationships are just like that, where it's just like someone's somewhat informed or not at all, but someone else handles certain things. So did you guys determine that ahead of time or just naturally that's how it worked out?
Yeah, I think naturally that's just how it worked out. I mean, in our situation, I was the breadwinner. So I basically, everything I made, it would just automatically get deposited. And then, you know, she would take care of logging in, paying the bills. You know, I never even balanced a checkbook. I had no idea. That was kind of all on her. Hindsight is always 2020, right? I wish I had a more active role in that. I was just kind of like blind eye. Like, I didn't want to know how much money we were spending on things or how much money we didn't have. You know what I mean? That's kind of how it all happened, right? It just kind of naturally. And she went to school for like bookkeeping and accounting and stuff. And it just made sense. You know, in all seriousness, I mean, she was good at it. And so just a lot better than I am. I'm more abstract, just number. I'm not a numbers guy. It's so funny. Sure. People always think that, you know, I worked in engineering and I retired early. And it's like, well, you must love spreadsheets and numbers. I'm like, no, not at all.
Yeah, there's a wide range. Well, and it makes sense. And there's no, I have no issue with it where someone is like, you know, she did accounting and stuff. It's like, that's her wheelhouse. Like that's, I mean, it completely makes sense. It's the interest levels in certain areas kind of push us in different directions. And that's fine. Okay. So it sounds like you came up to speed pretty quick. So you realized, hey, I need to figure out what's going on and make sure I know where all the money's going. Were there any big changes or big surprises as you started learning more and seeing how you were spending money? And I'll leave it open. Yeah. So what did you discover?
Yeah. Yeah. The big thing that I discovered was I was just pissing away money. Like, I mean, everywhere. My biggest thing was eating out, you know, music and concerts. Again, I really didn't have any idea where the money was going, but there was also like bills and stuff that I didn't need. Like I learned, you know, oh, I'm paying $160 a month for Dish Network, which I never watched. Right. So I canceled it. Like I went through and I just started slashing all those things that I didn't care about. But then the biggest change was just tracking my expenses. And once I did that, I mean, I was pissing away hundreds of dollars a month on like Chipotle and Taco Bell. And I mean, I worked downtown Minneapolis when this first started happening and realizing every lunch, like every day, right? A few of us would go walk the Skyway and go to lunch and you're dropping $10, $15, $20 every day for lunch. And it adds up pretty quick. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, on the way home too, I would drive through Wendy's, drive through Taco Bell, drive through. I mean, it was just constantly eating out. And then the weeks that I had my kids too, it's like, it was just easier to go to Applebee's. I was just spending so much money eating out. So that was a dramatic change for me.
Got it. Well, I'm guessing in those years, it was a little cheaper. I ate out. We don't eat out too often, but I ate out yesterday and I think it was like $20, like just for the food. And it was whatever, fast, casual, however they rebranded. Yep. But I remember Wendy's, especially back in the old days, you know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago, even, I could eat a whole meal for like $5. I mean, it was garbage, of course. I do love Wendy's and all the trashiest food you could imagine. Yeah. Love it.
You remember back then when it was all like the biggie? You could get like the biggie fry and the biggie drink. Yeah, I know. I used to do it all the time, right?
Yeah, nowadays it's just everything's a little more expensive. But
oh, absolutely.
We're old now. Things are literally more expensive, but it's like, I remember when you can get a McDonald's hamburger for 29 cents. You remember that?
Oh, dude. So I just went. So my kids are adult kids now, and I hardly see them, you know, every couple of weeks or whatever. But they came over. We went to brunch on Saturday, and we went to just my local Perkins here, right? Three of us brunch, $52.
Wow.
I know. I'm like, wow. I can't do that every week.
Yeah. And Perkins, for people that don't know, how would you describe it? I mean, it's not like a super upscale, like fancy place, right?
Yeah, it is a, I guess, lower scale, fast casual. I go there, I want to say regularly by myself. And then I always have my 20% off coupon because I'm a cheap bastard. But the thing is, it's like they're trying to reinvent themselves. It's pretty funny. Like they're building new fast concept stores that are more modern and remodeled. And I remember asking ours here where I live in Forest Lake, Minnesota. And I'm like, they're going to overhaul their menu and it's going to be super awesome. And they're like, yeah, it'll be about 4 years before they get to that point.
Yeah. Okay. So you did discover that you eat out a lot and it was a little pricey even back in the day. So did you then start eating in and bringing your lunch? What change did you make based on that?
Yeah, 100%. So I started doing, not all the time, but I definitely took advantage of like weekend meal prep. I'd bring lunch to the office, you know, when I worked downtown. I just got in the habit of making food at home. I mean, it's somewhat boring. I am not a great cook and meals are kind of half-assed and don't taste very good, but I do it. And it's funny because even some of the simplest things, I mean, think of me what you will, but like at work, what I started to do literally is I would just bring like boxes of quick oatmeal, boxes of ramen, and I could easily make that and just eat at my desk. And I think the hardest part there was just when you get three or four of your buddies, your coworkers say, hey, we're going to go get lunch. And you say, no, I'm not going to go. So I remember I cut back and started not doing that. Then I would started to bring in just on Fridays. On Fridays, I would go to lunch with the group because I still wanted that sense of community and just hanging out, having fun. So that was a big thing. That was a big change for me.
You referenced your career a couple times. Can you talk a little bit about what you did? You mentioned engineering as well. So let us know sort of your career path and that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. And again, I understand too, like some of the things that being able to accelerate my path to financial independence in that 10-year span, I realized I am coming at coming from a place of privilege at some point, right? I mean, I became sort of that high earner that was able to save and invest for a good like 7 years or so. But yeah, so I kind of split my career up into two, right? The first 18 years of my life, I worked in the printing technology and publishing space, basically working at commercial printers, pre-press shops. I love that industry. It's funny, I have like a mixed feeling. I got a love-hate relationship with like printed media and books. I love the thought of a freshly printed book and the smell of a book, but then I can fit 7,500 of them on my iPad. So I have a love-hate relationship. But anyway, so I worked in the publishing industry, and that led me to working for a software company in the publishing industry. And then that led me to working in the software industry at a couple different companies. And then I basically, the last 12, 15 years, I was in tech, in high tech, working my way up as an enterprise systems engineer for a large tech company. And so when it all started, when I discovered Phi, or when I got divorced, I was making about like $84,000 a year. As I started to grow my knowledge and stuff, and then moved into different roles, by the time I left, quote, retired, when I left corporate work, I was making about $127,000 a year.
What year was that at the when you left?
Yeah, I left in 2024. Yeah, February 2024 is when I left. So, and that's the thing, is as I started working my way towards financial independence, I started to put the year on it. People always say, like, what's your FI number? I really put my age as my goal. And then I was like, okay, by the time I'm 50, I want to be able to have the option to retire. I mean, not that I had to. I think a lot of people, they talk about FIRE, oh, reach financial independence, retire early. I always had it. I want to reach financial independence so I can retire early. Like, if you love what you do, if you love what you do and it fills you up, then dude, keep doing it. I mean, when I first started this, I loved my job. I loved what I was doing. I was like, dude, I could do this for another 20 years, but things changed along the way, right? I mean, that's the whole point of reaching financial independence, is it gives you options.
Totally. Yeah. And I think the one area where I challenge people often, now, if you love your job, that's cool. I think some people are in industries or professions where that makes sense. I was not in one of those where I loved my job or anything like that. It was kind of like, went to college, got whatever job I can get. And then I was like, oh, I do not want to do this kind of stuff, but it paid well and blah, blah, blah. But I do challenge people where they have done the job and they don't love it, but it's not horrible. And they've done it for 15 or 20 years. And I think you've done your time. Let someone else take that position, some junior person, but it's the opportunity cost of like doing the same thing or doing new things, new novel things, learning. And it is just a discussion point. Like I never push people. If people are like, I want to keep working, even though I have the option of not, usually I'm like, the opportunity cost of doing the same thing that you have been doing, I feel like is not a good trade. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think a couple things. One thing, you brought up a point too, is that I remember at one of the Camp Phis I was at, I've been to a handful of Camp Phis, and I remember that there was a couple there, and it seemed like every kind of group discussion we had, people were kind of, it was like the couple, she was retired and he was not. And everyone kept on kind of like pressuring him to retire. They could. Right. They're at a point. They had enough. They had more than enough, but he liked what he did. And I remember like one of the days, like I went over to him just one-on-one saying, hey man, you don't have to leave, man. Like I felt bad for him that it's almost like peer pressure. You know what I mean? Right. I was like, man, I don't know. I have mixed feelings because I grew up in a time where my dad, raised by a single dad, my dad hated his job. And, you know, he would come home from work exhausted. He worked in instrumentation at the St. Paul Brewery here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it went through a couple different owners along the way. It was Pabst, Old Milwaukee. It ended as Olympia, Hams. It was Hams in the beginning. It was Hams Olympia, Milwaukee, and then Stroh's. It ended at when it was Stroh's, but he worked there for 25 years or whatever. And he would come home and sometimes, you know, he was tired, dirty. And I knew that there were times when I didn't want to talk to him. I'd let him cool down first, right? And I knew I didn't want to do that. I did like what I went to school for. I went to school for graphic design and printing technologies. And for the most part, I liked what I did. And I kind of fell into the software side of things. I liked what I did there as well. And I will tell you that it was those conversations I had with others in the community, whether it was at Camp Phi or the Economy Conference, that really led me to take the chance or the risk to leave work, to retire at 50, right? Because there were parts of what I did that I did love, but there were so many other things I wanted to do with life, right? And that comes down to like, well, if you get to a point where you can do those things, you have choices, you have options, you can take the risk to go do those things. Like you can work in an industry that maybe doesn't pay very well or doesn't pay at all. You now have the ability to go do the work that fills your heart and your soul, do those things that light you up, right? Play guitar, create music, whatever. If you're an artist, go paint, go do whatever. But now you can do those things because you have the time now, right? You earned the opportunity to leave your corporate job. I know I just went off on a tangent there, but hopefully that kind of answered what we were talking about.
Perfect. Yeah. Tangents are welcome. And it was, I guess, related to the identity that we have with our jobs. A lot of times that is part of it, where it's just, if you're a lawyer and you worked for so many years, or a doctor, or fill in any profession. I mean, it can really be anything, teaching, like even any profession where you're really tied to it, your community, all of the sort of social capital that you've built up over years and your network. So like, it's hard for people to walk away. And it's one of the things like we all struggle with to like varying degrees. So it was easier for me. By the time I got laid off in like 2015, I was already like, I think this industry is not for me. And it's not a good match for me. So it was easy to like detach slowly over a few years. But yeah, if someone like the person that you mentioned and the couple that was still working, totally fine. Like I never want to put pressure, like you said, peer pressure, where everyone's like, you should quit. It's like, you don't know the full picture. Someone could be very fulfilled by whatever job. And if it's not the industry that I'm in, because I feel like there's not many management consultants that are like, wow, that really fills my soul or whatever, to get on the fucking plane and fly. Yeah, it doesn't quite make sense to me. Have the client yell at you and you got to get on calls in the middle of the night. Just not super fun overall. But moving back to the conversation. So you discovered Phi, you were moving up in your career, and it sounded like you made like a pretty cool pivot and you were leveling up. Did you have the timeline set? You mentioned, hey, I want to be able to retire at 50. I want to have the option. Was that early when you started figuring things out? Or was it as you got closer, you were like, hey, this actually can happen?
Right. I think my first goal was retire by 55. Because that seemed like an age where many people were. And so that was my first goal. But I really didn't, in the beginning, I didn't really have that. It's hard to have that future self envisioned of what that's going to be years in the future. It's hard. So that really wasn't the plan. But my plan was to hurry up and reach financial independence to give me options. I want to say waking up and going to work because I wanted to, not because I had to, was an absolute game changer. When I discovered that I was at a point where I could I could get up and go to work, I could go to my meetings, like you mentioned, I could get on planes, go visit customers, do that stuff. There was a sense of, I just don't even know. Like, you're just kind of elated. You're just kind of, you're walking a little taller. You have a little more pride, and you approach things. I don't know, a little more, you're just a little more free, and you're less afraid to say the cringy thing. You're less afraid to do, just buck the system, man. Like, just do your own thing, do the hard thing, and stick to your guns. You know what I mean? Like, do what you believe in. And if people get pissy about it, well, who the fuck cares? You, I don't know. Right. Like, that's why you have FU money now, right? Like, that was something that was truly, yeah, it changed the game for me. And so I think that's one thing that kept me in work as long as I did, was something that you absolutely, you know, hit on, was the identity piece. Because there was that sense of, well, if I wasn't this enterprise systems engineer, then who was I? Because that was everything. That was my identity at work. Even my personal life, you know, you're going to a family barbecue or a neighborhood barbecue. What's the first thing they ask? They ask, well, what do you do? Where do you work? And so I was like, I that was the biggest struggle, I think, for me actually leaving work, was just that identity piece.
What do you tell people at those neighborhood gatherings now?
I give a little bit of smile. I smile a little bit and I say, I do a lot of things. And I mentioned that I lead a small nonprofit that I started a few years ago. I help teach people about personal finance and financial literacy. I invest in real estate. You know, I do a lot of things. Eventually I mention, you know, I don't want to lead with it. If I say like, oh, well, I retired, or, you know, I retired last year. People, I don't know. I think so many people, I mean, let's be honest, everyone judges everyone. And when they say, oh my gosh, you're so young, like, how'd you do that? Or you're so lucky, or, you know, whatever the response is, it makes me feel, I don't know, kind of weird. But anyway, there's a little bit of a sense of pride with it, right? I like when I do say that I absolutely will mention to that person, yeah, I feel as though most people could probably retire in 10 years if they're intentional. Mm-hmm. And usually it's one of those things where they say, well, where do I start? You know, I mean, this happened recently. You know, I went in, I had another injection in my shoulder. So I was getting an x-ray, or what do you get? MRI. She's going through my chart and she's like, oh, so you going back to work today? And I said, no, actually, I'm retired. Oh my God. Like, stop the press. Like, it's just this whole thing. Cause she looks at your chart. She goes, well, you're only 50. Like, or I'm 51 now, but like, so how'd you do it? And I'm like, yeah, I think most people can if they're intentional. And I just feel as though, like, I don't want to preach to people. I don't want to force them into doing anything. But if someone's actually curious and they want to make the changes to get there, I'm happy to help them. Like, I'll give them my business card and say, hey, check it out. Give me a call, whatever. I'm happy to have that conversation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. And obviously we talk to a lot of people that are retired, sometimes much younger than either of us. Yeah, the judgment or the assumptions that people make, we have to be cautious a little bit, and we don't want to be jerks about it or anything like that. Obviously, we're conscientious, and like, we could read the room and see who we're talking to and if they want to go down that route. But yeah, it is cool when someone is like, tell me a little bit more. And there's always potentially, if a person wants to make excuses, they're like, oh, cost of living, or I have a different family situation, or there's a million things, or they really like cars or houses or something like that.
It's so crazy, Doug, because when I posted on LinkedIn that I was leaving work and I was going to spend more time on this nonprofit effort that I started, but I was going to leave work. It's funny, all the people that kind of reach out to me asking me, hey, let's grab a beer. Let's get it on a phone call. Let's talk to people. And I'm happy to do that. And I've talked to so many people in the last year. But the thing is, like, this one gentleman, I'm again, good friend of mine. Well, a friend of mine, he was a customer of mine. Then we became friends because I talked to him all the time. And we had a phone call conversation, and he's like, I want to retire by 62, but this, and this, and I think I'm going to have to file bankruptcy. I have $88,000 in credit card debt. And he's like, well, you know, what should I do? And I started like walking through some basic questions. And like you said, it was like, well, just example, I was like, well, what are your monthly payment? Like, what are your bills? Well, he leases his car. And I said, oh, well, so what's your lease payment? He's like $678 a month or whatever. I'm like, whoa. Well, is it possible for you to just buy a car that gets you around for right now in cash to save that $600 to put it towards one of your credit cards? Oh, but Chris, I'm a car guy. I lease one every 2 years or whatever. And I'm like, well, that's a change that I can't help you make. You know what I mean? Like, everyone kind of will either have excuses or, and that's cool. If you're a car guy, that's awesome. Like, I'm not saying you can't be. I guess I don't know where I'm going with that, but.
It's a good point. And basically, you have to find the thing that you can cut out. So like, if he's a car person and he's like, you know what, have to do that. Well, then live in a smaller place, like wear old clothes. Like, you gotta make a sacrifice somewhere. And there's excuses that people can make. And there, obviously, some are not excuses. Some are completely valid. If you are supporting your aging parents or some, like, everyone has obstacles, I guess, is totally the point. And everyone can probably find the things that they can cut out. And that's the important thing. But we're preaching to the choir, because a lot of folks that are listening, we're advanced in the FIRE journey here. So getting back on track here, we were talking about identity, and that is one of the hardest things for people to make the leap to retire. My wife actually maybe had a little bit with her job, even though I don't think she had, well, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I will, since she can't say anything about it. But I don't think she was like, I'm really proud to have this job and like this profession is like really rewarding. I don't think she felt that at all, but it took some time for her to get used to it, like a few years. And of course, there's the financial piece and benefits and some of the concrete, like, number oriented things. But at the end of the day, you were able to separate and retire early. How did you approach the identity piece so that you were comfortable, so that you can, you know, transition to the new retired life? Do you have any tips? Was it a big struggle? What can you tell us?
There was a time that I was actually struggling a little bit, because I thought my identity now was going to be, you know, I was the executive director for the Luger Foundation, which, you know, it's a nonprofit I started in 2020. We help families with babies in the NICU. And that was going to be, you know, my identity, right? I was going to lead this nonprofit to make a bigger impact this year and moving forward. And I felt as though I would just leave my corporate job on a Friday, and Monday I'd be running 100 miles an hour and making all this progress. And that was now my new identity. And it was a challenge. I was struggling. And I remember, like, I don't know, I was kind of just spinning, and I was getting like a lot of anxiety around it. And I don't know if that's just because there was no structure. I had to make my own structure. And so a couple of things really helped me. And that was one, it was talking to my good friend, Kevin Sebesta, which, again, many people here know. I remember calling him, and I would consider him a really good friend of mine now. Like, we talk all the time, not only about music and guitars, but about life and finance and everything else in between. And I told him, I'm like, man, I'm really struggling. And I remember I was at a music festival in Milwaukee, and it's called Milwaukee Metal Fest, if anybody wants to go, every spring, pretty rad. But I was there, and I actually had to leave early because I had a panic attack. Like, I was like short of breath, like the whole thing. I didn't know what was going on. And so I left early, got my plane back home. I needed to get home, get to a safe, secure place to then talk to my therapist, talk to my doctor, figure out like what is going on. And I talked to Kevin. And Kevin said, this is, again, one of the best pieces of advice he told me, is that when you leave work, think of retirement as a 5-speed manual transmission. And it's going to take you like a year in first gear, and then another, you know, 6 months in second gear, and then third gear. And it's going to take you some time, maybe a few years, to get running on all cylinders, and you're up running in fifth gear, and you're cruising, and you're in that new identity. You're making the thing, you know, making the changes, doing the things that you want to do. And now you're living your new life. Work was all I knew. I had done it my entire life since I was 16, right? And so now all of a sudden I'm not. And it was a big change. And so that was one thing that really helped. So just dial it back, set real expectations of what retirement will be. Give yourself some grace, right? It's going to take time to work your way up to it. And then I was having lunch with Joseph Sehy once, and I remember him telling me, he's like, treating it like a job. Like, you need to treat whatever it is you're going to do like a job. So, you know, you leave work and you're going to focus on whatever it is, you know, volunteerism or painting or podcasting or whatever it is, whatever you want to focus on, treating it like a job, giving it, I don't know, like, I guess more, being more serious about it. And that's the thing, is my nonprofit efforts was kind of like a part-time passion project for me. You know, I kind of did it half-assed. We've raised, you know, a little bit of money. We've helped 5 or 6 families every year since 2020. And, you know, it's pretty cool. But that was the big thing, is now treating it like a job and making sure that I'm reaching out, finding partners, engaged with social media, making sure that I have events coming up, making sure that I go get ongoing training. Like, I was just at the Minnesota Council on Nonprofits annual conference, learning new things, meeting people, networking. And let me tell you, after working in tech my entire career, it's a totally different muscle. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're in a totally different industry. But I think, I know there's a long-winded answer, but like, to get into my new identity, I think that was the thing, is really giving myself grace to build up to it and then treating it like a job. But it's a job that I can set my own hours. So that's pretty cool.
Quick just reference for everyone. So Kevin, that you mentioned a couple times, a lot of people have seen him at Camp Fies. I need to get in touch with him, but he's been retired for about 11 years. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So he has some years under his belt, and he's our elder, so we respect him. But he has an invite to the show. We just haven't been able to connect, and I was hoping to get him in the studio as he was coming through Longmont over the summer, but just wasn't able to work that out. And then you were a big name dropper, so that's good. So Joe Saul Sehy, you're just having lunch with your friend Joe, and he said to talk, or to take it maybe more seriously, to put some structure around it. And obviously great advice. It sounds like that helped you out. Super interesting, because there's such a wide spectrum. And I, maybe it's through my own laziness or the fact that I was self-employed for about 10 years and have slowly tapered down, I don't treat stuff like a job. And I just kind of haphazardly go through my days now. And it's fucking great. It works for me. And again, wide range. It would freak some other people out, but maybe I've like added enough structure. There's a couple spots each week that give me structure, but other than that, like, it's very free, and we can go on a quick weekend trip, like,
sure,
often. So it's interesting. Do you have any thoughts or observations on that? Just like how I have very little structure and I really love it, and you would like to have a little more structure.
Sure. I will say a little structure is good. I do like the open free time for me to work on those things I have to work on. You know, whether it's looking at social media for a new program or a new event that we're working on at the foundation, or I need to go through and edit and pre-schedule 2 weeks of posts on social media for Heavy Metal Money. Having that free time to work on those things, it's just not the structure I was used to. Because for so many years, like, again, when I left work, I was at a point too where I would, if I wasn't traveling, I was working from home, and I would come down to my home office here, and some mornings I would have 10 meetings in a day, right? I remember there was 12 meetings one day. And, you know, you're supporting customers across all time zones, and sometimes in India, middle of the night. Like, it was a lot going from one. I mean, you couldn't even schedule bathroom breaks, right? It was stuff like that. And so now, having that, I am controlling my calendar. Like, I put buffer blocks, and I around time blocking my calendar. So, and then I also have somewhat of theme days, right? So I'll make sure, like, Fridays, I go through my weekly to-dos, my inbox, kind of, those of you that know GTD, Getting Things Done by David Allen, that's kind of what I do. Stuff that comes into my life that I have to deal with every week goes into that inbox. And again, it's physically on my desk, but also digitally, like in my, I have an email folder that just says weekly review. I review that every Friday. And what do I need to do with that? Right? Do I need to respond? Do I need to take action? Do I need to do? So I think it's, there is some structure, but just not. I think what it was, you know what it was, Doug? It was because I wasn't in control of my calendar or some of the goals, some of the quotas, some of the things that were expected of me were truly unattainable, right? We all know how to make goals. We all know that they should be SMART goals, right? And the whole thing about SMART goals is they got to be achievable. And sometimes I think in corporate, that gets, I could do everything right and you still couldn't reach that unattainable goal. And that's what was, I guess, a little bit of frustrating for me, but.
Gotcha. So knowing what you know now, any things that you would do leading up to like when you were retiring to have prepared a little bit better? So, you know, you could pass on your wisdom and things that you learned to people that are going to retire soon, or maybe they're like a few weeks in or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think definitely like one thing that I mentioned, just make sure that you give yourself some time to work up to whatever that new identity is. Cause that was the thing, is it wasn't something that's going to happen overnight. That's the big thing. But I also think that there has to be more discussion or more thought with you, with your loved ones, whatever, on truly why you're working your way towards financial independence, why you're looking at leaving work. I think that's something that's so missed out. Like I mentioned, so many conversations I have with people that have reached out to me, and the first thing they were saying, well, you know, how did you retire early? Or what did you do? Or I would like to do that. What are some things that you did? And I kind of got to back up and ask the question, because Doug, I am surprised at how many people, when you ask them, well, what do you want to do if you could get up tomorrow and not fail? You could get up tomorrow and money, you know, you didn't have to work for money. What would you do? What lights you up? So many people have no idea. They don't know. And so that, I think, is the number one thing. So if someone was like, I want to reach FI, so many people sprint to FI, right? They're like, oh, cool, I learned this thing. I'm going to like double down on my investments. I'm going to invest in real estate. I'm going to hurry up and I'm going to retire in 10 years. Awesome. Then what? Right? So I knew like probably a year ahead of time, like I wanted to make a bigger impact with my nonprofit efforts. I knew I wanted to start taking podcasting more seriously and have my own podcast, right? I knew I wanted to do those things. And so I had somewhat of a plan working forward once I left. And I think so many people don't necessarily have that. And it doesn't have to be like professional endeavors, right? You could, you know, I want to plant a garden. I want to, Julian Johnsrud, I want to learn how to tango. Like whatever, you know, like whatever you want to do, I think more thought has to be put into that. That's just my two cents. Again, those of you that, you know, you can always happy to reach out to me and have a conversation, but I think more thought needs to be put into, if you're new, more thought needs to be put in on what you're going to do after the fact.
And one thing that I've seen successfully help the transition from like full-time to retiring is to go part-time. Carl, former co-host here, he went part-time for a little while. Elizabeth, my wife, kind of tapered down. And I think, I can't remember. I think in both cases, it was like 4 days a week and then it was 3 days a week. And it helps you kind of step away a little bit and get used to the idea of having a little more free time, and then you could pick up more hobbies. And I think it's like the point before of having a lot more structure versus me, where I have very little structure, and that works for me and my personality, but everyone's different and some people need some more guardrails and that sort of thing. But in the case of like retiring to something versus like running away, sometimes depending on the person, like you may need to retire to something where you have a little more structure. And other people, I think they could take that too far. And then they're essentially setting up like another job for themselves, like right away. And it's like anything to the extremes is not going to work too much. Yeah. So go on, Chris. Yeah.
I was just saying that's exactly what I did. Okay. Is I set up a job where I felt as though I had to be so productive and make these huge goals. I kind of contributed to, again, I'm sorry, I'm going to be another name dropper, but like Doc G talks about little P and big P purpose.
Right.
And that was the thing, is I was stuck in these big P purposes where it's like, well, if I wasn't getting the $1 million grants for my nonprofit, if I wasn't getting 1 million downloads on my podcast, if I wasn't doing these huge monumental goals, I was just super frustrated. Where now I've learned that it's more of the little P purpose, where the joy in just doing the thing, the joy of helping 6 families a year. I mean, now we're working next year, we're going to help 12 families is our goal. So if we can help 12 families, that's a win. If I can learn that one more song on the guitar, that's a win. It's the joy in just doing the thing. That was huge for me.
I think, yeah, very well said. And Carl and I were working on a book on laziness, but, and the thing, like we've written a pretty decent amount, but yeah, it turns out like we are such good examples of anti-productivity. And the point of this little section here is like, mm-hmm. it's okay to not be productive. And I'm pretty sure in our more productive years, like you and I would have been like, oh yeah, if you can be productive, like be productive. Mm-hmm. But there's something very glorious about not being productive. And like, I'm playing guitar and I'm like trying, and I'm like, I'm never gonna like play for a bunch of people any specific song or anything like that. And it's just for me. And it's like not very productive, but it's a great exercise for the mind. I mean, it's a fun thing that I want to do, but I'm not trying to like be a professional musician or anything like that.
You know what I learned? I learned, and I can't remember where, but I learned that I was stuck in that too, right? Especially in my 30s, right? I was full of piss and vinegar, wanted to like conquer the world. I was climbing up the corporate ladder, doing all the shit, putting in long hours, whatever, right? Whatever it took. And I always felt as though if I was playing guitar and not being productive, I didn't deserve to play guitar because I wasn't productive first. Or I would like take some time to watch a movie with my son or whatever. Well, I wasn't being productive during that time, and I feel guilty. I feel guilty for spending time with my son. How wrong is that, right? And so I learned, I can't remember where, but you got to change the way you think about productivity. And if spending quality time watching a movie, having a conversation with my son is what I was going to, if that's what I was going to do today, then I was productive. You can be productive doing the thing. And that's the thing that I guess really kind of clicked, where productivity just doesn't mean work. It can mean a lot of things. Like you said, Doug, if learning that song or playing guitar is what you were meant to do that day, well, then you were productive.
100%. Yeah. A close friend of productivity is efficiency. And I've heard, again, probably myself, but I've heard friends say, you know what? Like, I really want to make sure it's efficient. If you're having a nice meal when you're on vacation and fucking Italy or something like that, do you want to have like a really efficient meal where you like get in and get out? Or do you want to sit there and have a nice time and have a couple bottles of wine and hang out? Sure. If you're at the airport and you're trying to get through, then maybe you want it to be efficient, but it's like the right, you need to have sort of the right focus at the right time for you to define. I'm not here to tell you what to do, but yeah, to the point of like efficiency, it's like, yeah, in moderation, great. Mm-hmm. Do you want to like waste water or like water your yard? Yeah, don't do that. Like, be efficient with your right. water consumption. But at the same time, you don't want to rush through a meal with your family.
Yeah.
You want to sit down, have a nice time. So, okay. With a why of fire, you mentioned another dear friend of ours, Doc G. Great show. Check it out, Earn and Invest. But do you have any other tips for people that are searching for purpose. And actually, for myself, I think, you know, I've read The Purpose Code by Jordan, and there's a lot of other areas, but I feel like, well, in a lot of ways, I'm a nihilist. And I'm like, whatever. I'm like, I don't need much structure in the day. Things are great. I'm quite happy, but I don't have like the same sort of purpose. And you have the Luger Foundation, which I want you to tell a little more about it coming up. But for people searching for purpose and they're kind of wide open and maybe they don't have a lot of direction, do you have any tips for them to help find things that really light them up?
Sure, sure. I think one exercise that I did is I wrote down a list of all the things that I loved to do as a kid. All the things you loved to do as a kid or even in your 20s, right? Like what are those things that you loved to do just for the joy in doing it? You know, and for me, it was whether it was being artistic, drawing. I'm not a painter. I hate painting. Dude, I went to one of those wine and paint events.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, it's one of the most stressful times in my life. People are all like super chill and they're like, oh, it's relaxing and stuff. Fuck that. Anyway, painting is not my medium, I'm telling you. Anyway, I loved Legos. I love being artistic. I love playing guitar. All these things I loved doing as a kid. And that really kind of helped me figure out, okay, what are those things I wanted to do? And one of the big things on my list was philanthropy and helping those families with babies in the NICU. And that led to where I was going to spend most of my time. Yeah. And then obviously it's helping people with financial literacy on heavy metal money with the blog and the podcast. I want to help others that were where I was 10 years ago when I was financially and emotionally ruined because I just went through divorce. I was not knowing like, can I still afford to live here? How am I going to take care of my kids? How am I going to afford to live to, yeah, you don't have to work until you die. You can actually be intentional and you can, I want to help people understand that because the default plan we're all given doesn't have to be your default plan. And that's what I want to help others. I don't know if I ever told you this, like my kids and I flew out to California for a vacation two years ago in October. We went out there because I had just read Die with Zero. Yeah, great book that, and one of the things he talks about is just like building memory dividends, right? And like living your life now with the people that you care about. So like, we're like, hey guys, let's go out to California for Halloween. We went like to all the Universal Studios, all the haunted houses and shit. It was super rad. They had like a Stranger Things house and the Last of Us house. And it was super awesome. Went to the Hollywood sign, all that stuff. But on that plane ride out there, that was when I told my kids, hey, I'm going to leave work when I'm 50. I'm going to leave work next year. You know, they were kind of, okay. And then my daughter, who was 22 at the time, says, well, Dad, don't you know my generation will never retire? And that crushed me, man. It like, are you kidding me? Like, you're 22. Like, you have so much runway for things to compound. And that was, again, another kick in the ass to say, that's why I want to focus on some of the financial literacy pieces and doing the blog and the podcast the way I'm doing it now. So I can't even remember what your question was, Doug, but I just went off on a rant.
That's perfect. That is perfect. I don't remember the question either, but I'm sure you answered it. So with your son and daughter, right? You have one.
Yeah.
So what have you started teaching them? So obviously that was a realization. And then they were, I'm assuming you were like, you can retire, compound interest. You kind of gave some concrete things that they could start doing now. What else? What did you do?
I haven't really tried to force any of this stuff on them. I know some things they've kind of taken in through osmosis, if you will. You know, I remember one time I had a whiteboard in my office here and I was analyzing a couple deals. Those of you that may know, I invest in real estate. I got my first residential rental property in 2017. I've built that portfolio up to about 10 rental properties by the time I left work. But I remember I was like, I had these numbers on this whiteboard, and my daughter walks in and was like, what are you doing? She's looking at the board like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, these are expenses, blah, 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 blah. This is what I'm going to, you know, maintenance costs, vacancy rate, blah, blah, blah. And here's my cash flow. That's how much money I'm going to get. And really, I'm not doing anything. And she was like, wait, what? Yeah. So, I mean, I think she understands that people can use that as a vehicle to help build wealth. Yeah. So I think my kids kind of understand it. I don't think they're really down the path yet. I mean, you're still pretty young, 23 and 25 now. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I mean, one thing my son did early on is he opened a Vanguard account at 18. I mean, heck, that was something awesome. That I never would have thought of. Him and I had those discussions. He was asking me questions about it and stuff. And yeah, so now, I mean, I told him, I'm like, you are light years ahead of most people, right? I mean, if you just continue to put something in there, like anything, like $50 a month, like whatever, just keep doing it. You know, he could, again, be able to possibly retire mm-hmm. early by 50 mm-hmm. or whatever. So yeah, that was one thing he kind of got from just being around me. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing.
Yeah. And I mean, just having you as an example where you worked hard, you moved up, and then you were like, oh, I'm done with this career. And obviously real estate is a thing. You're working on the foundation as well. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you have free time, and you told him I'm leaving the corporate job. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But yeah, like you said, I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't know exactly, but obviously you can't, if you force too hard, it's like, that's a little bit of a deterrent versus like a solid encouragement. They have to want it, right?
Absolutely. Or at least hear it from someone else, right? I mean, seriously, I mean, not yeah. hear it from your parents. That is the thing that they won't listen, right? So I'm excited about Amy and Mark's new initiative that they have coming out. And I forgot the name of it already, but it's basically getting college kids and young adults to learn about and experience what life could be like and learn what financial independence is and how to get there. I'm super excited about that program that they're going to launch, I think, next year. So pretty rad.
Yeah. I haven't chatted with either of them, but Amy Wilson was on your show. We'll link mm-hmm. up to that. And it was recorded at the Camp Fi a few months ago or so. But she talks about it there and talks about Longmont a little bit. So yeah, we'll link up to that. But yeah, I was thinking I need to have Amy and Mark, because they actually live just a few miles away, here in the studio to talk about community and what they're working on. So
I don't think these concepts are just, we know it's not taught in schools. We know that you know, they have to go outside of what the mainstream media is to learn how to reach financial independence, why you may want to. I think that is such, I just, it kills me. Like, for instance, I have a good friend. He was a high school buddy. I like practically lived at his house. His parents were super rad. You know, we played video games together. We played D&D together. I mean, and he was best man in my wedding. Super rad dude. But then now, you know, he works in IT. And we were texting about something the other day, and he's like, I'm on call this weekend. I can't do this. I can't do that. And then he's like, yeah, that sucks to be me. I'll never retire. I'll work until I die. Like, it just kills me, man. Like, I just can't stand hearing that. And it's probably on me that I get so pissed off when I hear people say that. Sorry to get all amped up, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. I had a recent experience. Guy I went to college with, who I think I always thought, hey, he's smarter than me. He's doing better and doesn't study as much. Yeah. I was like, yeah, we're pretty much like Elizabeth retired. I'm not doing very much these days. I'm like, like, are you close? And he's like, maybe when we're 65 or whatever, not even close. So, and he asked a couple questions, and I laid out some, I'm like, oh, if you actually want to know, I laid out some of the higher level 4% rule, mm-hmm. couple things like that. And he was like, oh no, like spend a lot. And again, the sure. excuses that we talked about before, but I mean, we graduated at the same time. basically both had roughly the same kind of careers, pretty sure. And I mean, he's been working for like 10 years longer than I have. With the self-employment, it's a little fuzzy as I taper down, but for the last 5 years, I haven't done that much. So when I chatted with him, I was just like, man, the paths that we take, again, the compound interest of everything, whether it's spending or the saving earlier or whatever. Cause he had saved a decent amount for where he is now. But like once, you know, you and I learned that we could save a little bit more and accelerate the process, well, then we jumped on and we don't have too much time. I don't want to take your whole day, Chris. This is a lot of fun, but you did mention the real estate. So you have 10 doors. Can you just give a quick synopsis on that side of the house?
Yeah. Yeah. So again, I bought my first residential rental property in 2017. I scaled that up to 10 doors. I had since sold a few of those doors because I was using some of the cash to do my first commercial property. So I'm now developing and investing in commercial real estate. So we're working on our very first new construction commercial project. I say we because I'm partnered with a friend of mine. Me and him are, it's not a syndication deal. It's just us two that have a partnership. And we're building a 12,000 square foot medical clinic. It's an urgent care and general practice clinic in Scandia, Minnesota. Again, it's public now, so I can talk about it. I mentioned it on a couple other podcasts where I had to be hush-hush. So now I can actually say Osceola Medical Center in Osceola, Wisconsin is going to be operating a medical clinic, and they're leasing the building from me and my friend. And that's in construction right now. We got all the footings in, the foundation blocks are in, a bunch of earthwork is being done. We're going to get all the parking lot and all the asphalt and curb work done hopefully here before the freeze, then they'll start framing. So yeah, it's exciting, but I'm learning so much along the way.
Yeah, I'm sure. Man, and I was going to say, I remember there was an episode on your podcast, which we'll link up to, where you did cover like, hey, I'm working on this deal. I think it was before it was public and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So if people want to reference that, they can get more info.
Sure.
The other part is the Luger Foundation, which you have mentioned a couple times, but I'll just give you the floor to talk about, I guess, the origin story a little bit and then what you're trying to do. I think there's an event coming up. It'll be in the past by the time this episode comes out. But if people want to get involved, you could let them know how to get in touch with you or check out more stuff with the foundation. But I'll just give you the floor on this.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Doug. I really appreciate the opportunity. Yeah. So I started a public charity, a nonprofit foundation back in 2020, part-time passion project, basically to provide support and financial assistance to families that have babies in the NICU or like have complications during pregnancy. And, you know, we know so many times babies can be born early. They spend weeks or months in the NICU. And even with insurance, families can get strapped with thousands of dollars of medical debt. And then also at the time of care. So families that have babies in the NICU, they just have their new bundle of joy and maybe they're super early. They got to spend weeks or months in the NICU. And at that time, you may be missing work, maybe a place to stay if you come from out of state. Here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, we partnered with the Masonic Children's Hospital, which is a level 4 NICU. They can handle the really complicated cases. They help families from surrounding states, greater Minnesota. They come here for care. So they're like missing work, lost wages, need a place to stay. They need meals. They need parking passes. Like, believe it or not, this is the most ridiculous thing. You're going to spend 2 weeks in the NICU or longer, and you still have to pay for parking. Like, it's just the goofiest thing. And it's hundreds of dollars a week. And so we've negotiated down, like we have discounted parking passes that we can help pay for. But yeah, we're doing what we can to help support those families. Yeah. And so it's my way of kind of paying it forward. I'm focusing on this particular mission is that I was born early. I was born 2.5 months early. I spent 2.5 months in the NICU. And again, this was a long time ago. This was 1973. And by the time I was home and healthy, everything was cool. My dad went back to the hospital to set up a payment plan. So at the time it was about $250,000 in medical bills. That was for my stay, my mom's emergency C-section and her care. Now that would be about $1.2 million, just to let people know. I know. But like, so, and what we've learned is that my dad went down there again. My parents were really relatively young. My dad was like 20 years old. He went down to the hospital, set up a payment plan, and the hospital came back to him and said, your bill is paid for in full, anonymously. So there's generosity out in the world, and somebody took care of that giant medical bill. So imagine yourself at 20 years old thinking you're going to have to set up this payment plan to pay off this debt. And all of a sudden that weight is lifted, gives you so much more opportunity than you may not have had. And so that's what we're trying to do. Little bit by little bit, we're trying to, again, pay it forward for those families that need help. And so one of the things we're doing is this year, we have our very first inaugural, that's what first means. And we have our inaugural Harvest of Hope 5K, where this is a walk run event here in Forest Lake, Minnesota, where we're based. And again, we're raising money to support those families. And we got some amazing sponsors. Again, shout out to Concierge Title, that's local here. Jennifer McCarthy, who's a realtor, and Rapid Press right here in Forest Lake, Minnesota. All of our printing needs, they've contributed a lot, and many more sponsors. But in all the registrants that are going to be walking or running or bringing their dogs, bringing their strollers, it's kind of like what I like to call a 5K mosey. So again, I appreciate you taking some time for me to share that. And again, this is the very first year. We've got big things planned for future years. When I mentioned this to our own city parks and rec department, they were totally on board, and they were like, well, you should have got us involved earlier, because they want to be part of it. They want to get food trucks, make it a big event, make it a day, leverage some of the parks that are available in the area. They could help promote it. So I feel as though as we move forward, it's going to be just a bigger and bigger event. So,
man, Chris, that's awesome. And we'll link up so people can check out more information for Lugo Foundation and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's so amazing. And the fact, like you said, you're helping out something like five or six families so far each year. Life-changing. I mean, like you said, for your family, it made a staggering difference. Really amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're gonna keep doing what we do, and hopefully we can help more people. So cool. Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. And lastly, Heavy Metal Money, who should check it out?
Man, that is a great question, Doug. You know, I feel as though I'm actually working on that. I'm working on really tailoring who my audience is. That's one of the biggest takeaways. You and I were just at FinCon, and that was a big takeaway for me, was really trying to narrow down. I think I'm casting too wide of net, but yeah, anybody that really wants to, you know, level up their saving, spending, investing, earning, turn that up to 11, man. Let's focus on it. Let's make it happen. Again, I got tons of great guests on there. You know, I just had Lauren Almond on there that talks about reaching a millionaire status by 31, retiring by 33. We just had Jesse Kramer on the podcast talking about long-term investing that really, really works. And we got some great guests coming up too. So heavymetal.money, or our podcast is The Extreme Personal Finance Show. Hoo-yah!
All right. Yeah, we'll link up to all the stuff. And Chris, it's a blast. Always fun to catch up. We'll talk soon. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer. This show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. Okay, so we both play guitar, and when we were setting up this call, you asked if I was a tube amp guy or digital modeler or anything else. And I actually have a couple tube amps and one sort of practice amp, a Fender like Mustang, like 25 watt. It's fairly inexpensive, and I just got that when I was kind of getting back into it. But yeah, I love the tube amp. So what about you, Chris?
I also have a tube amp. That was like my first combo amp, was a Crate tube amp that I had when I still lived at home. I was a teenager. I just got my very first guitar. I like it, but I think that the now doing more of the digital modeling for me, I like the fact that it's just a fuller sound. I don't know. I just like that type of modern sound that some of the new, like, I want to say modern metal has, you know what I mean? I mean, I'll always cherish, again, those the sound of Metallica, Kill 'Em All, just the raw energy, right? But I just like some of the fullness, and then the sound when you're down picking. It's just I can't explain it, man. It just comes out.
No, it makes sense, and I like it. It's a difference in style, right? Like a jazz player would not enjoy the hard clipping of distortion that you're talking about. And I'm more like on the like classic rock and hard rock side, so it's more like the natural overdriven tubes versus like, again, the hard clipping where you get that chug and you like feel the air push through. So what are you playing on now, because you've done you're doing some more practicing, right? And playing out.
Yeah. So, just some 50-year-old dads, we got together. I was kind of pulled into the mix. These guys, the drummer is the common thread here. I went to high school with him. They started playing kind of, again, classic rock type style stuff. You know, they asked me to kind of, well, they said that I bring some energy to the band. I just can't help it, right? I tend to move around a lot. It's kind of my jam. But yeah, so we started jamming. They got like 28 songs under their belt now. They've been playing a lot. So I have about, I don't know, 7 or 8 songs, some 80s and 90s. And to that point too, you know, I will change some of the modeling to sound like that. And you know, what's really wild with AI now too, man, it's absolutely crazy. So you know the band, the company Positive Grid, they make like a Spark series of amps and accessories. Our friend Kevin Sebesta, he turned me on to the Spark 2 Go. It's like a small little practice amp that you can like carry around with you, plug your guitar into it, and it's got like a bunch of presets. And you can set it up. And I had 4 different presets for different styles, right? Like AC/DC, I'm gonna practice Back in Black, right? But then I'm gonna practice Megadeth, right? So I can switch the presets. But they came out with this AI that is phenomenal. Like normally you would have to string together like these pedals and preamps and, I mean, 17 different things to get the tone you're looking for that particular sound, right? That particular album or song or artist. Now you can just type what you want. And literally I was like, I'd like a tone that sounds like Metallica, Ride the Lightning from this, you know, this year, blah, blah, blah. And it will put together 4 different examples of what that tone would sound like, and you can pick which one. Wow. And then you can assign it to one of the presets on this practice amp. It blows me away. And that is, again, one of the, I want to say, good uses for AI. This is not AI for evil. This is a good. So anyway, I just wanted to share that. It's like, it's overlooked, and I think it's so awesome. Anyway.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I looked at the little Spark and other similar things, like the Fender amp that I mentioned. I think there's whatever 50 presets in there, and they will like hit tones for certain songs, and it's very good. I mean, the thing that's holding me back is not the tone. It's like me being able to play like whatever song I'm thinking of. So it's funny. I'm like, oh yeah, that is great. But it's super cool because people, maybe they're hunting down the tone for like Allman Brothers, Fillmore East or whatever. Like they want that specific sound from that show, that kind of thing. And I'm sure AI could do a great job. And that's where it is a good use. Very cool. Okay, we could go on, but I do want to know, what's your main axe these days? Like, what are you going to where you're like, I got to pick that up?
Yeah, so I've recently discovered the company Solar. So Solar makes a variety of models out there. I can't remember the actual model. So I'm actually one that I bought it for travel and just easy ease, like portability. They're a 3/4 scale guitar, right? They're scaled down travel size guitar. And Doug, I got to tell you, it has become my daily driver. I've got 3 other Jacksons that are 3/4 scale guitars. I have a couple full size guitars as well. I have Ibanez, but I've now switched to Jackson. And I love playing like my Jackson Randy Rhodes Flying V, super fun. But man, when I started playing the Solar, it changed the game for some reason. It's just super light. It's just effortless. I mean, everything about it just feels good. You know, people start talking about how the action, like how far away the strings are from the fretboard and how smooth it is. It's very smooth on sometimes the frets. You know, you can get it custom, you know, you can sand down, make sure it's nice and smooth against your fingers when you're sliding around. But man, the Solar is just, it's so good. And it's funny, you know, you mentioned the Chug. And it's funny because Solar has, I think on their YouTube channel, it's called Chug School. Its entire thing is like, does it chug?
I've seen that, some of those.
Yeah, they have like just amazing artists that just rip through, like, yeah, it's pretty awesome. So
very fun. Yeah, and I'm a Les Paul guy. So I have a couple of like sort of the cheaper Gibson Les Paul. So I have like a Special and then a Tribute. And, you know, I keep looking at standards or like lower end custom shop, but it's like guitars got really expensive during COVID and after, and like especially the big name brand stuff. So I have found a brand called it's called Eastman, and they did violins and other string instruments, and then they got into like jazz boxes. Now they're doing solid body for the last 10 years ish, but it's very good. They're out of China, which some people like view negatively. However, it's a very excellent factory with luthiers that like do a really great job. So I did get one of those, sort of the higher end. It's a Les Paul Junior, so it's just like the one P90 mm-hmm. pickup. Yeah, super light, like kind of like what you're talking about. The fret works awesome, very smooth rolled fretboard, so it feels played in. And they actually, mm-hmm. instead of a nitro finish, it's like a hand rubbed like varnish. So it's very thin and it feels like antique-y. And I enjoy like a reliced guitar. I don't want to put the first scratch in there. So I like there to be a little like wear on there already. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it's interesting you say that because again, I've talked to a few other people too. And I think, you know, there's the stigma about where your guitar is made. And like you said, people would like frown upon the ones that, oh, it's a knockoff made in Mexico, or this is made in Taiwan, or it's made in China. But like you said, I think that the technologies and the tooling are getting so good, right? I mean, think about it. iPhones are manufactured in China, right? I mean, it's like the tooling, the manufacturing, the expertise is getting so good. You can get quality products. Again, they have to maintain quality control, right? I mean, they got to have people there. They got to make sure that they're to their standards, but you can get some really good guitars. And I just pulled up my model number. If people are curious, I love it because it's the carbon black matte finish and it's the AB4.61MC. Again, why? I have no idea, but that right now is my favorite. My favorite guitar to play.
Very cool. All right. Yeah, we got to stop or we'll do like 30 minutes on music. So, all right. End the sound check.